Job and four other books that follow make up, in the English Bible, make up what we call the poetical books. Job, Psalm, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Song of Solomon. There, I got it. We've already studied the first 17 books of the Bible, from Genesis through that last one we studied, called Esther. Job, along with Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, are also fit into a special category. I don't know whether I've got that on your note. Yes, of wisdom literature. The type of writing, the reflective tone that these books have. Also the questions that these books handle. Questions of our existence, of our happiness, of our of a good life, and to deal with issues that are practical. Where the books we've studied thus far, though they've had practical lessons in them, though they've been somewhat doctrinal, were primarily historical quite a bit throughout. For the Jews, the ultimate wisdom belonged to God alone. Job 28 and verse 28, the book says, to man he said, behold, the fear of the Lord, that's wisdom, and to depart from evil is understanding. And so those two things make up quite a bit of the lessons we find in the books that are like this. In 1 Kings 4:29, the Bible says that God gave Solomon wisdom. New Testament, James, in James chapter 3 and verse 17, speaks of the wisdom that is from above. And then he tells what that wisdom is like as opposed to earthly wisdom. As far as the background, as I've indicated in your outline, seems to be set in the ancient days of the patriarchs. And some things that would suggest that, if we look at the life of Job, Job was a prosperous individual, and his life resembles, except for all the suffering that he goes through, resembles that of one of the patriarchs, Abraham. Also, his longevity. If you look at the last chapter, 42, if you go to Psalms and backpedal, last couple of verses of Job 42. It says, after this, Job lived 140 years and saw his children and grandchildren for four generations. So Job died old and full of days. There came a time, of David and later, that people didn't live that old. We don't know how old Job was at the time the events of the book concluded. I would imagine he looked a lot older than he was when it started because of those three friends, in quotes, that he had, and his wife. I have my own ideas as to why his wife stayed there, but I won't go into those since Janice is not available to counteract that. And don't you tell her what I say, Kathy, I'm going to get you. Okay. Anyway, if we look at the book too, there's no mention of the law of Moses in it. No mention of the law of Moses. No mention of Moses himself. No mention of Jewish events or the Jewish institution. The author is not Job. And for the most part, those that I chose to read that talked about Job didn't want to venture a guess. They would say that the Talmud, or the Jewish books that suggested that it could have been Moses. But then it was also suggested, and I think rightly so, that because of the style of the writing, would not suggest Moses, but would suggest someone of the period of Solomon, that Solomon wrote, because of the style with which he wrote literature that, you know, that he was inspired to write. The scene is likely, after doing some reading and trying to put it down in words, I put it down in words here, but I don't think they make much sense. So I'm going to tell you that there's somewhere in the area of the Middle East, Palestine, some say it on the, somewhere around the Palestine-Arabian border. They arrived at that conclusion based upon where his three friends were from. Idumea was mentioned. The land of Edom was mentioned. Brother Harper was one that had that idea, as he had studied what others wrote, and as he studied the book itself. So it would appear that somewhere around in the area of Palestine was where Job was at the time, or where his home was, because that's where his friends lived. Brief outline is the next thing I have, a structural outline. First section talks about the temptation of Job being decreed, so the first couple of chapters. And then all that controversy that goes on. There's three sections there. I assume that that the chapter designation that Brother Hopper gave here deals with those three friends and their discussions and the back and forth conversation with Job. And then there's a summing up of the controversy, chapter 32 through 37. And then God has his say as Job is acquitted and restored. Subjects primarily talks about human suffering and the problem of evil in the world. That's the discussion about being bannered back and forth. By the way, I don't know where this was, but some time ago, several years ago, there was a place up in East Tennessee, far northeast corner up there, northeast of Knoxville, where they had an outside theater on the Book of Job. Anybody ever go to that? I think there's a national forest up in that area, and they had it out in a amphitheater type situation out in the woods. And the clothing that they had on in this pageantry or theater or whatever they were calling it was glowed. And it really came home at that time as to what was going on in the Book of Job. It really had some meaning, something somewhat similar, but not anywhere near the Passion of Christ, that the story of the last week of Christ that is pictured, say at Branson and some other places you can go and see. Some messages from the book. I put down three of those messages. One, and a word is this way for lack of any other wording, I guess. Defense of God in view of the problem of human suffering. All men suffer. But we who believe in God have a special challenge, and I think that's true. That was brought out by several writers. We believe that God is infinite in goodness. And we believe that God is a God of love. And that God is a powerful God. So the question arises for the Christian is, why do we suffer? That was the question that these three friends of Job raised. Why do Christians suffer? If God loves us so much that he sent his only begotten son into the world to save our souls, why do we have to go through all this suffering we have to go through? I'm not saying we shouldn't have to. I'm just saying that's a question that's presented to Christians. And a lot of times we don't want to answer some of those hard questions because we don't want to do the research. We don't want to look into our hearts and into the Word of God to try to find out, well, what the answers? Well, I'm just going to slough it off. That's the way it is. We might suffer less if we did a little bit more searching as to what's going on. Why do people suffer so much? Might be a question too. Why do some people suffer a whole lot? And other people seem to be just happy-go-lucky through life. And nothing happened. Of course, a lot of people are in denial too. There's things going on, but we don't know they're going on. From the book of Job, we gather a number of things from the standpoint of his wife's thinking and the three friends. Some of which are maybe not totally correct. Some of which may not be correct at all. But his wife and his friends held that Job's calamity, his suffering was what? Was caused by what? Well, it was caused by sin. That's what they said. He was being punished because of his sin. Well, is that true or false? Well, that's not a true statement. As we look along in some other points I've got here, we find that, and we can see that sometimes there will be suffering because of sin. If you don't believe it, you go down to the beer joint and get yourself drunk and then get behind a wheeled car. A lot of people have done that. Now, when you hit that tree, you're going to suffer. You may not feel it right then because you've been heavily dosed, but there's going to be suffering, and you won't be the only one to suffer. And there are other things that a person can do to their bodies that can cause suffering, and it's caused by sin in that person's life. The sin that caused their body to get to the place where it is. Certain drugs, for instance. Thinking some people pretty well determine the destiny of their child physically because of taking drugs during pregnancy. A family that we know that's got a son who is not married to this girl, but they have a child just born, weighs a little over 2 pounds. Boy's known to have been on drugs. The girl has cancer. Diagnosed before the baby, I don't know when, at what point it was diagnosed. They've got problems that could be caused by drugs. They're living in adultery. I don't know that God necessarily punishes, you know, there'd be a whole lot more punishment going on if he punished everybody that was living in adultery. David got punished, we know that from Sunday morning lesson. It's class this morning. But their view was wrong on the reason Job was being punished. And not only wrong, but it was devastating. Because here was his wife and here were his friends. He expected comfort from them. And he didn't receive it. Now, there's some practical solutions, I think, that are given in the book as the book, as you get further along in the discussion. I did copy this from a book by Shelley. He has a good book on two good books on the study of the Old Testament and study of the New Testament. Where he's got outlines and other information, just like similar to Brother Harper's. Brother Harper's, I think, is in more detail. But Brother Shelley is a little bit different in his approach. But this is one of the things he said. He says, concerning the problem of human suffering, the response recommended by this book is as follows. And that was his book. Since one cannot always understand what happens to him, and this is what he suggests is the bottom line as far as the book of Job. Since one cannot always understand what happens to him, much less the reason behind it, let him humble himself before God and trust the Almighty to see him through. And we think of Romans 8:28 in the New Testament, where Paul said, the church at Rome, we know that all things work together for good to them who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. Now we know that not all things are good, because that doesn't mean that. But he said that all things work together for good. Now do I see that all the time? Not on your life do I see the good all the time that comes out of things. But although we think we're smart, we're not near as smart as God. And that's one of the bottom lines of the book of Job. You read along about the 38th chapter, and we'll read a few verses a little bit later. But God lets Job know in no uncertain terms that he wasn't there and wasn't in the position of making the decisions when God decided to set up all things the way that he did. Alright, another subject, and I think I've got the subjects listed here, the patience of Job, from James 5:11, the King James Version. Behold, we count them happy which endure. You've heard of the patience of Job. And a lot of us probably over the years, without studying beyond what the King James says there, I have picked up that word patience there and thought it meant the same thing as it does today. And it doesn't. But Job was hardly patient, wasn't he? Let's think about what the King James. He was hardly patient, as we use the word today. He didn't bear well up without complaint all that was going on in his life. He wasn't patient with all those foolish people that had all those few foolish comments to him. His wife, his quote, three friends. Their behavior was foolish, and he didn't have much patience with what they said. Look at Job chapter 16, verses 1 through 4. Job 16, 1 through 4. In case you're trying to figure out where I'm at, I'm on page 3 out of 5 in my outline. So, Job, and you see I hadn't used this as New King James, and I haven't used this Bible much, and it just won't let me know where Job 16 is, but here it is. Job answered and said, and this is his response to one of the men, I've heard many such things, miserable comforters are you all. You'd like to talk to somebody like that. Shall words of wind have an end? Or what provokes you that you answer? I also could speak as you do, if your soul were in my soul's place. I could heap up words against you and shake my head at you. So he's making fun of them. And he said, look, if you were sitting where I am and I was out over there sitting where you are just griping and telling me what all I've done wrong, I could come up with some of the same stuff you're talking about. Make about as much sense would be his thinking. So Job wasn't very patient with these three guys. These are hardly the words, the sentiment of one who's an example of patience. But really this word in the King James, if we look back to the early part of the verse, it says, behold, we count them happy which endure. So there was a big discussion in two or three places I went, but there wasn't discussion at one point. That word endure, if you look it up in an interlinear, Hebrew interlinear, or Greek interlinear, to go from the Greek to the English, the Greek word, I don't know the words, but I can tell if they're the same little squiggly marks and the same letters. And there were similar letters in the word endure and in the word patience that's used later in the verse. And really, that's what the word patience means in the Greek. It means perseverance. It means steadfastness. It means endurance. So that's my lesson in Greek for tonight. We'll stop there. That's all I know. Okay, page 4, like Paul Harvey would say, human suffering and the problem of evil. I'm going to give you some things to think about here, because in the book of Job, one thought before we get into some of the scriptures. As I mentioned a while ago, we have a God who's a God of love. God is all-powerful. God who is wholly good, and yet evil exists in the world. Well, there's some folks say, and particularly atheists, say that all those things can't exist. They can't coexist. They can't, those propositions are incompatible. That is, if we have a God of love, we have a God of all power, then he would not allow evil in the world. I know I'm getting a little deep for a lazy Sunday afternoon, but we'll try not to go any deeper than that. What they were saying is no more than two of those things could be true. If you have a God that's a God of love and a God of that's powerful, then the evil can't be in your equation. Evil can't be in the world. And they're saying that, you know, you don't have a powerful God. You don't have a God who's a God of love. That's all. They don't believe in God. Probably other reasons. So this book of James, the book of Job, rather, explained the presence of suffering. Well, how does it? What does it say about it? Well, in Job 1, verses 6 through 12, and I will read those because I can find them fairly easy. Job 1, 6 through 12, we find that Job is being tested. There was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord. Satan also came among them. And the Lord said to Satan, from whence do you come? So Satan answered him, you know, going to and fro on the earth. And then he says, you know, you made a hedge, verse 10, you made a hedge around your man Job. And he loves you and he fears you and he shuns evil. But you let me stretch out my hand, or you stretch out your hand and touch all he has, and he'll curse you to your face. The Lord said, well, as long as you don't touch his person, this is what he says this time. Behold, all that he has is in your power. Only do not lay a hand on his person. And so, also, if we look at James 1, verses 2 through 4, we'll be studying that beginning pretty soon, next two or three weeks, in the book of James. James chapter 1, 2 through 4 talks about the purposes of the trials we go through. It's to build up our endurance. It says happier those who are tried. Let's look at James and I can quote rather than misquote. Okay, James 1. Two through four. My brethren, count it all joy. Be happy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. That's New King James. But let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. So it tests character. Suffering tests character. Trials test character. Can it result from personal sins? Evidently. Evidently can, and we gave some suggestions of ideas where it would. The reference there is Job 4, 7 through 9, John 5, John 5, 14, John 5, 14. Really, that's James 5, 14. Can't spell James. J-O-H-N. James. Where he says, if any of you are sick, let him get the elders of the church to pray over. And then it says, if he had any sins, they'll be forgiven. So there's a man that's sick. And if it's based on sin, that's what I get from that. But even if that didn't, we know of situations where suffering does result from personal sins. Not that God is punishing everybody that sins. Purifies the sufferer. Job 23, verse 10, we'll just reference it. It chastens and humbles all God's children. Job 33, 19, and 29 and 30. Also in Hebrews 12, 5 through 7, speaks of God chastening his children just like you would chasten one of your children, just as we chastened our four boys when they were growing up. I think they recall that today, too. They don't bring it up, but it seems that they do recall that. So each one of these views is presented by various ones in the book of Job. Each is true in certain cases, but no one of them is the total answer. And we need to guard ourselves from concluding that all suffering, or that specific suffering, a particular case of suffering, is an example of punishment from God. In God's answer to Job, we see a point made, a latter part of the book, that man cannot understand everything that he experiences. Let's look at Job 38. Job 38, that'd be toward the end of it. Again, it's toward the book of Psalms. 38 verse 1, and we'll read on down a few verses. Then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, "Who is this who darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Now prepare yourself like a man. I will question you, and you shall answer me," God says. "Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth?" Come on, give me an answer. "Tell me if you have understanding. Who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who stretched the line upon it? To what were its foundations fastened?" I mean, if we were going to set up a globe, we'd have to fasten it to something. It's only right, you know. Remember those pictures of the world on the back of a turtle? You'd have to have been in school a long time ago to see that. That, you know, the world was once thought to be flat too. Wasn't in my time. That's as much as I'll say. Or who laid its cornerstone? You know, everything we lay today has to have a cornerstone. The house, the foundation, the building, you know, a plumb line. When the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy. Or who shut in the seas with doors? You know, why doesn't the water just run all over everything? Most of this earth is water. Why don't we just run off? Well, gravity. Boy, that explains a lot. Could you put that up there, that gravity? I mean, God could have assigned you that particular assignment. You know, that'd been your assignment, you know. Melvin, you take care of gravity, and I'd have been lost. Melvin would have been, we'd all been lost to do, you know. God said, this has got to hang together. There's got to be some, I got a sun, I got a moon here. Where do you want me to put it? How far do you say? You can't even think that far? When I made the clouds its garment and thick darkness its swaddling band, when I fixed my limit for it and set bars and doors, when I said, "This far you may come, but no farther, and here your proud waves must stop." Have you commanded the morning since your days began? And cause the dawn to know its place, that it might take hold of the ends of the earth and the wicked be shaken out of it? He asked some more questions, but that'd be enough to give us an idea. Later, Apostle Paul in the New Testament, as he was on his missionary journey, stopped at the city of Athens. A number of people had gathered together, anxious to hear any news, especially new things. And he talked to them about the unknown God. So he's the one that made the earth and everything in it. He's the Lord of heaven and earth. In him we live and move and have our being, as some of your poets say. And so he talked to them about an unknown God, one that they evidently had worshipped, that had a statue to the unknown God. But he told them that this God was mighty. The book of Job closes with a rebuke of Job's friends. Look at Job chapter 42. 42, 7 through 9. And make me thirsty just thinking about Job. And so it was after the Lord had spoken these words to Job that the Lord said to Eliphaz, the Temanite, my wrath is aroused against you and your two friends, for you've not spoken of me what is right, as my servant Job has. Now therefore take for yourself seven bulls, seven rams, and go to my servant Job and offer up yourselves a burnt offering, and my servant Job will pray for you. For I will accept him, lest I deal with you according to your folly, because you've not spoken to me what is right, as my servant Job has. So Eliphaz the Temanite and Bildad the Shuhite and Zophar the Namathite, went and did as the Lord commanded them, for the Lord had accepted Job. Book of Job indicates that Job's fortunes were destroyed. Look at verse 10 and following. The Lord restored Job's losses when he prayed for his friends. Indeed, the Lord gave Job twice as much as he had before. And it tells some more about it in those verses that follow. The book further demonstrates that God is concerned for those who suffer. And in the New Testament, we have Jesus' example. Emmanuel, God with us. And Jesus called a great physician. And though he came to seek and save the lost, he came to serve. And he loved people. And he saw people suffer. He had compassion on them. And he took care of the suffering of many people. He raised people who were dead. He grieved with people who had lost loved ones. New Testament tells us, as far as these trials that come upon us, that the trials that may come upon us that we feel like we're undeserving of, that we will not be given more than we can bear. And there's a way of escape for some of these trials, temptations, or whatever. 1 Corinthians 10:13. God will reward those who persevere, according to Romans 8, verse 18. Next time that we meet, 2 weeks from tonight, I think it'll be, we'll study the book of Psalms. We may spend more than one Sunday night on the book of Psalms. Appreciate your attention tonight and your attendance. If you're here not a Christian, haven't studied on your own or with someone concerning Christ and your relationship with God, and you know what you need to do to come to Christ to have forgiveness of your sins, why not do that tonight? As a Christian, if you wish to rededicate your life or desire the prayers of this congregation on your behalf, would you let that be known as we stand, as we sing?